We have a challenge before us. Good afternoon to everybody. It's good to be back and see familiar faces, and welcome to those who have not been in my shiur in previous years. Our subject for today is Megillat Rut, but specifically the subtitle was of loyalty and treason, and I want to focus particularly on. We often focus the story of Ruth on Ruth, on Naomi, and on Boaz. We'll get to them shortly. But I want to start actually with a conversation about Elimelech. And I assume everybody has a copy of the source pages. We will come to them in a moment. I want to start with the beginning of Perek Aleph. I'm going to make an assumption that unless there's something particularly difficult, rabbinic language or source that if I read, I can read without necessarily having to translate. Is that a fair assumption? No, not a fair assumption? I should translate?
Yeah.
I will translate as best I can. I may translate in summary form for time purposes, but we'll get the idea. All right, we'll start from the beginning. Vayi bimei shvot ha-shoftim. Already I approached the first problem that we're going to have. The days of the judgment, or the judges, Shvot HaShoftim, Pshat literally means the days of the judges. On the other hand, the double language, judging of the judges, caught the attention of Chazal. We will come back to that phrase a little bit later. Vayi ra'av ba'aretz, famine. Vayelech ish mi Beit Lechem Yehuda lagur b'sdeh Moab. Our subject went from Beit Lechem Yehuda to go and live in Moab together with his wife and his two children. At this point, we have no names until Pasuk Bet. Shem Eish Alimelech, Shem Ishto Naomi, Shem Shnei Vanav, Machlon V'Chilion Nefratim, Beit Lechem Yehuda. Now we have the whole family. Elimelech, his wife Naomi, sons Machlon v'Chilion, and they come to Sde Moav v'Yusham. Ayamot Elimelech ish Naomi. Elimelech dies. Why? Let's start from dividing what it says and what we think it says. What does it say?
Dies.
Doesn't tell us why. We'll see momentarily that it opens up a Pandora's box of questions. Vayamot Elimelech ish Naomi, vatisha'er hi ushnei vaneha. We're leaving behind Naomi and the two sons. She's the only one. She's the surviving spouse. Vayisu lehem nashim moaviot, shem achat Orpa, v'shem hashenit Rut. They marry Orpa and Rut. For now, doesn't matter to me who married whom. Vayishu sham ke'eser shanim. They live there for 10 years. One of the major questions in the chronology of the story is who. Did Elimelech die first and then they married Ruth and Orpah? Did they marry first? 10 years. When did he die? The sequence of events here is not clear. I leave it for, if we have time, we'll come to the structure of these psukim a little bit later. In the meantime, Vayamutu gam shnehem machlon v'chilyon, v'tisha'er ha'isha mishnei yeladeha u'me'isha. Machlon v'chilyon also die. And now, Naomi is left bereft of her husband and her children. V'takom hi v'chalotea v'tashav misde Moav, ki shama b'sde Moav, ki fakad Hashem atamo latet lahem lachem. She returns to Beit Lechem Yehuda, to her land, to her country, because she heard, together with her daughters-in-law, because she heard that God has remembered his people to give them bread. The rest of the parak deals with the return journey, the conversation with Naomi and with Ruth, with Orpah and Ruth. Orpah's return to her land. Ruth continues on the journey. We'll come to the rest of the conversation a little bit later. But I want to start with the basic question, which is, why did Elimelech and the two sons die? So first let's start with a preliminary question. Why do I assume that there's a reason for their death? Why do I assume that there has to be a reason for their death? There's a reason. In Tanakh, there's a reason. Clearly, the story would not be here in Tanakh if it wasn't to tell us that there's a reason for the death of Elimelech and his two sons. The focus on Naomi, on her bereavement, on her pain, on her anguish, the fact that she is left bereft of her husband and sons, tells us that her husband and sons died not for naught. That wasn't an accident, wasn't some tragedy of life, but rather they died by, as best we can describe it, by divine hand. The question therefore becomes, why? That leads to the core of the question, which is, what is the chait? What is the core issue in this part of the story that leads to the decision to kill Elimelech and the two sons? What was the chait? So traditionally, we assume it's because they left the country, and certainly that's what the Mefarshim said, that's what Chazal pointed to. Various aspects of that, or variations on that theme, you will find amongst all the Mefarshim. And here I will turn your attention to the source pages. Sources 1, 2, 3 essentially describe various interpretations as to what Elimelech did wrong, and ultimately what was the chait that ultimately led to his demise. The truth of the matter is that it's more than just the chait for, it's more than just the onish, it's more than just Elimelech. If you talk about Elimelech and Machlo Mechiyah, when you read the rest of the story, as Naomi comes back to Beit Lechem, you realize that there's nobody left of the family. There's virtually, there's one Ploni Amoni and one Elimelech, who's a distant cousin. Essentially, the death of Elimelech, Machlo Mechiyah, is the destruction of an entire family, an entire lineage. Call that karet. And so the question is more than just the death of Elimelech, it's really the onesh, which is an entire family lineage which is destroyed or removed from the Jewish people. And there are a number of parallel events in Tanakh where we also find a similar kind of divine action to destroy a head of household and children of the household because of a chait that goes from generation to generation. Anybody's ever learned Megillat Rut before? You know, typically, we always point to two classic stories that are connected tangentially to the story of Megillat Rut that link us in a similar structure, very similar kind of event. Head of household dies, children die, left with a bereft spouse, and the need to, in some way, recompose the family. The two classic stories that we typically point to in our study, in our parallel of Megillat Ruth, are Lot and his daughters, and the destruction of their family, not to mention the rest of Sodom, and Yehuda and Tamar. If you look at the early... That's no good. Okay, they'll be back. If you look at Rashi, our typical answer to what the chayt of Elimelech was, Vayelech ish ashir gadol haya, uparnas hador, he was very wealthy, he was the leader of his generation, v'yatza me'eretz Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz. When I need it, I'll call you back, because it just... I don't know, it just has to log in again. Thanks. He went from the land of Israel to Chutz La'aretz. And because he went to Chutz La'aretz, what's the consequences? Going to Chutz La'aretz, I'm sitting here in a lunch booth living in St. Louis, and I'm telling you, you go to Chutz La'aretz, and the consequences are catastrophic. Rashi adds an observation, Mipnei Tzeruta Ayin. And it's not just the fact that he went to Chutz La'aretz, there's a selfishness in that act, and that selfishness makes the journey to Chutz La'aretz much more significant. Shaita einot tzara be'einayim be'aniyim habayim l'dochko l'kach ne'nash. People were coming knocking on his door. He was very wealthy, he was very powerful, and because people were coming to knock on his door and he left, he essentially refused to help them. That is the first interpretation. If I had to categorize the chait, how would we categorize the chait? How do we typically categorize sins in the Torah? Ben Adam l'chaverov, Ben Adam l'makom, Ben Adam l'atzmo, if we want to add a little bit of a metaphorical context. How would we categorize? Ben Adam l'chaverov, so with the ayin, leaving Eretz Yisrael. Says the Gemara in Baba Batra, similar idea. Tanur Rabbanan, Ein Yotzim Eretz Yisrael L'chutz La'aretz. The Gemara has a whole discussion about the halacha context in which one is allowed or not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. The basic issue here is for Parnassa. If Parnassa is such that you cannot earn a living in the land of Israel, then it is permissible to leave Israel. Says the Gemara in the middle of the paragraph, V'chein ayad ha'vishim b'yechai omer, Elimelech machlon v'chilion, G'dolei ador ayu, Farnasei ador ayu, Mipnei mane enshu, Mipnei shiatzu me'eretz Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz. Shneimar v'tatom kol ha'ir alehen v'tamarna azot no'mi, Mali azot no'mi, Amrav Yitzchak amru, Chaziten no'mi, Shiatzatem me'eretz Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz, Ma'altala. People of Bethlehem, when Naomi returned, turned and said, this is Naomi, look what happens to somebody who leaves Eretz Yisrael and goes to Chutz La'aretz. This shir always frightens me, by the way. Just, you know, this shir always frightens me. The problem here is severalfold. Number one, the Gemara itself says that at a certain point, for Parnassa reasons, if you cannot earn a living in the land of Israel, you're allowed to leave. Many, many of the Rishonim deal with this issue halachically. The Rambam talks about it. The Rambam all deal with the issue halachically. There comes a certain point to which you are basic Parnassa issues. If there's a famine in the land, and you need to leave, so be it. So why, in the case of Elimelech, is there such an issue with their journey to Chutz La'aretz? Oh, so the flip side of that is the addition that Rashi adds, which is also in the Gemara, Parnasei Ador Ayu, Gdolei Ador Ayu, the assumption that Elimelech was somebody of great stature and had a responsibility, and therefore his leaving was more than just going to Chutz La'aretz. It was, in a sense, something which impacted the rest of the community. This is reflected in the language of the Midrash in source number 3 in Rut Rabba. Lama ne'nash Elimelech? Why did Elimelech get punished? Al yidei shehipil liban sheYisrael alayhem. He pil liban sheYisrael. It's an idiom. Means he deflated them. He deflated them. He disappointed them. He caused them caused them to be disheartened. Which is the literal translation. And so the assumption of all of these mefarshim is that there's a core issue in just the journey to Chutz La'aretz. Elimelech had a responsibility for his community, responsibility for his neighbors, responsibility for the broader context of the people of Beit Lechem. He abandoned that responsibility and left to go abroad at a critical moment, Vayhi Ra'av Ba'aretz. The truth is that in our comparison to both Lot and Yehuda and Tamar, we find that not only do we have similar circumstances of some kind of tragedy that befalls the family, we find a similar chet involved in each of them. At a critical moment, they or somebody they are responsible for go to chutz la'aretz, and that action is considered a terrible moment in their lives. For example, in the case of Lot, Lot's journey back from Mitzrayim, Lot comes back from Mitzrayim with Avram. If you remember the story, right, Avram goes down to Mitzrayim because of a famine. Just a derech agav. Actually, you know what? If we could maybe get that picture back up. Derech agav, just by the way, if you, when Avraham goes down to, when there's a famine in the land, Avraham goes down to Mitzrayim. Why does he go to Mitzrayim? Why do they go? If there's a famine, typically it's because there's a drought. If there's a drought, you want to go where there's water. Where is the water? So if there's no rain, you go to a place that has natural source of water that's not dependent upon rain, which in this case would be the Nile. And so Avraham goes to Mitzrayim. When there's a famine in the next generation and Yitzchak is faced with a similar challenge, he starts the journey to Mitzrayim. Gets part of the way, God says to him, not so fast. Yaakov, Yosef, the whole story, Sefer Breshit is full of famines. Every time there's a famine, they go to Mitzrayim. In the case of one of the questions that I want to address, no, don't need, turn the lights on, it's okay. Well, I just want the picture back because it disappeared on me. You can't see it? All right. All I really wanted to show you is that Mitzrayim is south, so as long as you all know that, that's okay. Turn the lights on. I'll come back to this. This picture is important for us, but I'll come back to it later. In the meantime, they go to Mitzrayim, they go when there's a famine because there's water. Avram goes to... God commands Abraham to go to the land of Israel. He comes from Haran. God says to him, Lech Lecha, he comes to the land of Israel. There's a famine in the land the moment he gets there, and he goes to Mitzrayim. Justified or unjustified? Major machloket rishonim. Rashi says that was the Nisayon, that he wouldn't question, that he wouldn't challenge, that he would just go. The Ramban says, and you have it in source number 5, Gam yitziyato min ha'aretz shenitztavala betchila mipnei hara'av Avon Asher Chata. Avram should never have gone down to Mitzrayim. God said to him, come to the land of Israel, there's a famine in the land. Okay, so you have a little bit of a more emunah than that, and you stick it out. Avram turns around immediately and he runs to Mitzrayim. God says to him, not so fast. Says to Ramban, all kinds of things befall Avraham in Mitzrayim for that reason. Assuming we work with that assumption, how long does he stay in Mitzrayim? Unclear. He gets this, or is taken on the border. After she's discovered, and the story is discovered, Avraham is immediately ejected from the land of Mitzrayim, and he comes home to the land of Israel. Then there's a fight between his shepherds and Lot's shepherds. Why is there a fight between the shepherds? Leaving aside for a moment Rashi and the Midrash about this eating with muzzles and not with muzzles, right, with the animals. The simple pshat of the reason there's a fight between the shepherds is because there's still a famine. There's still a drought. And Abraham got the message, he came back home. Lot, on the other hand, when they decide to split, when Abraham says to Lot, I'll go left, you go right, I'll go left, ancient maps didn't face north. They faced east, which means right to left is north and south. So Avraham says to Lot, you take the south, I'll go north. You go north, I'll go south. Where does Lot choose to go? East. Lot looked out and he saw the Areya Kikar. And the Areya Kikar, Sodom, Amorah, Matsuim, and Tsoar, the five cities of the area of Sodom, is compared to Eretz Mitzrayim. It's an oasis. It's an oasis. And because it's an oasis, there's water there, underground springs. Kegan Hashem, Ke'eretz Mitzrayim. And therefore Lot chose to go, Vayisalot, Mikedem. He goes eastward. Eastward means he leaves the land of Israel. Chazal expressed this with the line in the Midrash, Ayelech, in source number 4, Vayisalot Mikedem. Hisia atzmo mikadmono shel olam. He leaves the Eternal One. The land of Israel is the land that is before God, the Eretz Shelif Ne'ashem. His choice to return to a place which is irrigated by underground springs and not by rain takes him outside of the land of Israel. Abraham got the message. Lot did not. Chose to go to Chutz La'aretz. Chose not only to go to Chutz La'aretz, but to go to Sodom, and the rest of the story unfolds as we know it. There's a similar parallel story that happens with Lot, with Yehuda and Tamar, in the aftermath of the sale of Yosef, which Yosef is sent by Yehuda's own doing. Yosef is sent to Chutz La'aretz, essentially disconnected both from the land and the family, and Yehuda Me'et Echav. Yehuda leaves the family. He goes down to the land of Adullam. He goes to Adullam. He goes outside what is considered essentially Me'et Echav Ye'et Ad Ish Adullam. He goes essentially outside of what is then the land of Yaakov, the land of Israel. The result of which is the destruction of his own family, which Yehuda himself sees as a punishment for Mechirat Yosef. How do I know that Yehuda see that all the brothers really understood that the loss of Yehuda's two sons, leaving aside for a moment the chait which is associated with them, but how do I know that the family saw, at least the brothers saw, the death of Yehuda's two sons as a punishment for Mechirat Yosef? Interesting side observation, not really relevant to this year.
What Reuven promises to
Correct.
Go later on.
When Reuven turns to his father and says, if I don't bring Binyamin back, you can kill my two sons, and Rashi makes the observation, Bechor ze shotehu, this son of mine is an idiot. Your two sons are not my two sons. What Yaakov doesn't understand is what every one of the brothers understood, which is what Reuven was really saying. If I don't bring back Yosef, let happen to my sons be the punishment that happened to Yehuda's sons. In all three cases, there's a component of the chet related to being either expelled or voluntarily going outside of the boundaries of the land of Israel. And therefore, we could address Elimelech in the same way and associate the story of Elimelech with the journey to Chutz La'aretz, not only the journey to Chutz La'aretz, but to a large extent, Elimelech, in a sense, returns, if you will, to the roots sort of repeats the story of Lot, if you will, by going to Moab. Moab, geographically, is a very similar place to where Sodom and Amorah were originally, and of course, Lot's daughters, survivors of Sodom, the birth of Ammon and Moab, are in a certain sense a continuation of the legacy of Sodom, and there's much more to be said in that regard, but in the interest of time, I'm going to leave that for a different conversation. And so in the end, I would say to conclude this first part of our discussion, the classical approach to the chet of Elimelech is to see the issue as the journey from the land of Israel, the abandonment of his people, leaving the land that is Eretz Asher Lifnei Hashem, a return, a repeat, if you will, of the chataim of Lot and of Yehuda and Yosef, and essentially, in the context of the sale of Yosef, and essentially the focus being on the journey from. The problem here is that we have one glaring, gaping issue that this interpretation does not resolve. And that is, not the journey from, but the destination to. We have many examples of Ra'av Ba'aretz. And in every single instance of a Ra'av Ba'aretz, a famine in the land, there's a drought, there's no rain. Where do you go when there's no rain? South, to Mitzrayim. Elimelech chooses to go east, to Moab. Just cross over the mountains. problem is that if there's a famine because there's no rain, if there's a drought in the region, in the deserts of the Middle East, why would there be rain in Moab any more than there's rain in Yerushalayim or in Beit Lechem? Droughts rarely are that limited. It's possible. The drought is limited to the narrow strip of the land of Israel, but if I were to take today's context of the Middle East, those if there's a drought in the region, then any country that's dependent upon rain for its source of water is going to feel and suffer the issue. Moab is the least likely place to go to if there's a famine. Add to that the fact that the story begins with Vayi b'mot shvot ha-shoftim. Vayi b'mei shvot ha-shoftim. Vayi ra'av ba'aretz. If you've studied Sefer Shoftim at any point in time, can you pinpoint when the famine in the land of Shoftim is recorded? Sorry, the land of Israel is recorded in Sefer Shoftim. The story takes place in parallel to a book of Tanakh, Sefer Shoftim. Sefer Shoftim is a book that spans approximately 350 years. In those 350 years of history, when was there a famine? And the answer is, we don't find it. So somewhere along the line, we have to stick the story of Megillat Rut into its historical context of Sefer Shoftim, and the most logical place to do it is to find the reference to this famine. There is no reference to a Ra'av in the days of Sefer Shoftim anywhere, and we're left with the question, what is the nature of this Ra'av? Which raises the second question, why does Elimelech run to Moab, of all places? That's the least likely place to go to. So we have no choice. We're going to have to try to figure out what the context of Sefer Shoftim is, what the background to the story is. Is there a backstory that we're missing that would explain to us the two great mysteries of the famine and the journey to Moab? And it might shed a little bit of a different light on the story of Elimelech. Add to that the ultimate question, which is, there is no reference anywhere in this, at least in the simple reading of the text, there doesn't seem to be a reference to Elimelech's position of stature that Chazal described. Parnas Hador, Gadol Hador, the great one of the generation, the wealth of Elimelech. The story doesn't tell us this. It starts with the famine and the fact that he goes to Moab, and suddenly we're left with the question, what's the source of the chait? In the text, the source seems to be focused on the fact that he goes to Moab, that his sons marry Moabites, that he stays there 10 years. And Naomi only comes back when? Ki fakad Hashem et amo. When she hears that God answered his people, heard his people, responded to his people, fakad Hashem et amo, latet lehem lachem, to give them bread. Also not a language that you would use to describe the fact that it rained one day and ended the famine. So what I'd like to do is try to explore with you in the half of the time remaining the historical context of Megillat Rut. Here, Chazal points to two possible hints as to exactly when the story took place. B'mei Shvat HaShoftim is a period of, as I said, 350, 400 years. That is a hard time. That's not a number that gives us a very specific reference. All of Nach, essentially, from Yoshua until Churban Bayit Rishon is approximately 850 years. So sometime during the course of 400 years doesn't narrow the field that much. And so Chazal offered two reference points to suggest when specifically this story took place. I don't think they did so just to be able to tell us who the players are. I think they did so because it sheds light on the foundation of the backdrop of the story. The first thing Chazal tells us in source 14, Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna Amar Rav, It's on the second page. Rabbavara Huna Amarav Ivtsan Zeboaz. Ivtsan Zeboaz. Who is Ivtsan and who is Boaz? So Boaz we know from Megillat Rut. Chazal are pointing to Boaz and saying that Boaz was a Shofet. In other words, does it say specifically that he was a Shofet? On the other hand, there are certainly indications in the story that Boaz is an individual of great stature. He sits by the shire, he commands the Zkenim, come together at his beck and call. He has a land, he's got wealth, the people come to him, he's a man with great respect. Certainly Boaz is a central persona in Beit Lechem, and Chazal therefore connect that to the language of the Shofet, leader of his people. And here I want to interject just an aside about Shoftim. This would be a good time to turn off the light. Just an aside about Shoftim. This is a map of, and it's not on your source pages, I apologize. But yeah, it's okay, they're gonna turn off in a second. She just came to turn them off, so that's fine. Okay. This is a map, that's fine. This is a map of the land of Israel at the time of the Shoftim. The orange, if you can see the orange, is essentially where the Jews lived. The yellow are the Canaanite strongholds that we were unable to conquer or to settle during that period of time. And if you look carefully, you'll see that it lists, I don't know if you can read it because it's not so clear, but it lists most of the major, or lists all of the Shoftim of Sefer Shoftim. Shimshon is here. You can see the list of all of them. Gidon, Tolav, Don, Yiftach is over here somewhere. Yiftach, Shimshon is down here. If you look at a map of the Shoftim, the first impression that you get is, geographically, they're very spread out. They're very spread out. They're Shoftim all the way up north. Essentially, Chazal goes through great lengths to identify every Shofet from every Shevet. It's almost as if every Shevet had its own Shofet. Not quite that way, it's a little more regional, but... Okay, we did it again. We lost the password. Okay. Oh, so be it. Can I just turn the lights back on? There we go. It's almost... We lost the Machshev again. It's almost as if every Shevet had its own Shofet. And that's true. There's virtually no two Shoftim from the same Shevet. So Chazal went through Sefer Shoftim, and they said, if there's a Shofet in Beit Lechem...
Yeah.
If there's a Shofet in Beit Lechem, who would it be? Well, there's only one Shofet listed in Sefer Shoftim from Beit Lechem. And his name is Ivtsan. How many, raise your hand here if you've heard of Ivtsan. What do we know about Ivtsan?
Lots of kids.
That's basically it. We don't know anything from Sefer Shoftim. We know nothing about Ivtsan except that he comes from Beit Lechem. But that was enough for Chazal to pinpoint the story. Again, these kinds of midrashim that identify, a couple of years ago I talked about the role of midrash. These kinds of midrashim that identify names not with other names, with other personalities, are often not meant to give us an actual historical identification. This person is this person, but to give us a reference point in time. And so our first frame of reference is to look at Ivtsan historically and see if Naomi returns to Beit Lechem in the days of Ivtsan, then what happened when they left Beit Lechem? First question. Second question, second point of reference. Is source 13?
I wonder if I could just make this so that it doesn't disappear on me?
Yeah.
Okay.
The second point of reference, I'll continue while this is going on, is the frame, the phrase, Yehi Meshot HaShoftim. Chazal picked up on the double language and offered in source 13 a Gemara in Baba Batra the statement, Yehi Meshot HaShoftim, Dor Sheshaftu et Shoftav. A generation which judged their judges. Meaning, says the Gemara, Amar Omero Tol Kesami ben Shinecha, Omero Tol Kurami ben Enecha, somebody, the Shofet would say to the people, remove the toothpick between your teeth, and they would turn to the Shofet and say, remove the beam from between your eyes. And another way of saying that they looked at the Shoftim and said, this is a leader, this is our leader, this is what we've got, right? This is a Shofet. So that leaves us with the question of looking through Sefer Shoftim and finding the lowest point spiritually of not just the people, but the leadership of the Shoftim that we have. Of whom could it say? Could we say Dor Sheshaftu et Shoftav? Now, the truth of the matter is, if you know Sefer Shoftim, they're not necessarily the ideal leadership model in any context. But there's no question that there are one or two that stand out as those leaders for whom we would say, God save us from our leaders. And the one that I think is most dramatic in that regard would be, take a vote. Sefer Shoftim?
Shimshon,
maybe. Yiftach. Ironically, between the votes of Shimshon and Yiftach, there's indication that Shimshon and Yiftach are chronologically parallel to each other. Shimshon in the south, Yiftach in the east. What the proof to that is a separate discussion. But certainly that period of time, I think, would be the most significant to say Dor Sheshaftu et Shoftav. Actually, if you take a look on page 3, I charted this out for you in case anybody had any doubts as to how bad it got. What you have in this chart is a list of the five major cycles of Sefer Shoftim. There are a few other Shoftim that are not listed here. I didn't include any of the minor Shoftim, what we call the ones of whom it just says that they married and had children and led cities, etc. Very good. Okay. But if you take a look at in each machzor, if you learn Sefer Shoftim, you know, there's a cycle to Sefer Shoftim. Each cycle goes through a period of there's people sin, and there's an enemy that God sends as a punishment for them, a period of time in which they are going to be threatened by some kind of foreign power. The Shofet arises from amongst the people to save them at a critical time or dilemma, and then leads the people. The cycle itself is described in Perek Bet, and then we have one iteration after another. In Perek Bet, it tells us that each iteration gets worse. Gets worse because when they don't learn the lesson of the previous generation, they repeat the same fate, so then they self, it gets worse. So what I've done in this chart is I've divided up the stories in structure. The top row is the description of the chait in each case. The middle row is the description of the onesh, or the response of the punishment by God in each case. And I just by quantity of text, of whom is the greatest discussion? Yiftach. If you look at the nature of the chait, Otniel ben Knaz and Perek Gimel, V'yasu b'nei Yisrael tara b'nei Hashem, v'yishkechu et Hashem alokehem, v'yavdu et ha-ba'alim v'et ha-asherot, they abandoned God, they served the Baalim. Eud, second column, v'yasifu l'asot b'nei Yisrael l'asot tara b'nei Hashem, they repeat the mistake. Devar Perek Dalet, v'yasifu b'nei Yisrael l'asot tara b'nei Hashem, they also did that in the eyes of God. Gidon Perek Vav, Yasu B'nei Yisrael Arab B'nei Hashem, Ditto. Yiftach, Vayasifu B'nei Yisrael Lassot Arab B'nei Hashem,
ויעבדו את הבעלים ואת האשתרות ואת אלוהי ארם ואת אלוהי צידון ואת אלוהי מואב ואת אלוהי בני עמון ואת אלוהי פלישתים ויעזבו את השם ולא עבדו. In short, you have a pantheon. Monday they went to the god of Ashtoreth, Tuesday they went to the god of Aram, Wednesday they went to the god of Chidon, Thursday they went to the god of Moab, right? Not quite. It basically describes the geographic regions of the land of Israel, saying that each community in the land of Israel, each area was drawn into a cultural affiliation with their neighbors. From the Canaanites internal to Aram in the north, Moab and Sidon in the north, Moab and Ammon in the east, Plishtim in the south, and it's Hefka. After the story of Yiftach, we have some of the minor Shoftim, the story of Shimshon, which doesn't have an introduction, part of the indication that this is an introduction to both stories. And then we have two postscripts to Sefer Shoftim, Pilagish Begiva and Pesal Micha, which are anachronistic and don't have a time frame. This is the lowest point by the chet of Sefer Shoftim. Similar in terms of the onesh, I'm not going to read all of it, I just want to read the introduction to Yiftach. Vayimkirem biyad plishtim uviyad b'nei amon. God, in his response, sold them into the hands of, and in this case, every generation is a different enemy. You have Melech Knan, Kushan Rishatayim, Yavin Melech Tzor, Midyan, Eglon. Every generation had its enemy. In this case, in the case of Yiftach, the enemy was Plishtim and Ammon. So, if you know the story of Yiftach, you know that Yiftach never fought a Plishti in his life. Probably never saw a Plishti in his life. The Plishtim is a reference to Shimshon. Another indication that this story divides into two. One is an introduction to Yiftach and the other is an introduction to Shimshon. Vayu'atzu vayu'atzutzu et b'nei Yisrael b'shana hi shmona asrei shanat kol b'nei Yisrael asher be'ever hayarden be'eretz ha'emori asher be'gil'ad. They oppressed and distressed all of Israel on the east side of the Yarden for 18 years. ויעברו בני עמון את הירדן ללחם גם ביהודה ובבנימין ובבית אפרים ותצר לישראל מאוד. Then they crossed the Yarden and they began to oppress the tribes in the center of the country. Binyamin, Yehudah, Ephraim, the heartland. And Israel was greatly distressed. How many times have they cried out to God and said for Shoftim to come and save them from their enemies? Many. And each time the response is this Shofet, that Shofet, or another. ויזעקו בני ישראל אל השם לאמור חטאנו לך וכי עזבנו את אלוקינו ונעבוד את הבעלים. God, we have sinned, we have worshipped the idols. ויאמר השם ובני ישראל הלום ממצרים ומן האמורי ומן בני עמון ומן פלישתים וצידונים ועמלק ומעון לחצו אתכם. You have been oppressed over the last 300 years by any number of different enemies. And in each case, v'titzak elai v'oshia etchem yadam, you cry out to me and I saved you. V'atem mazavtem oti v'tavdu alim acherim, l'chein lo osif l'oshia etchem. I will not do this again. You're on your own. L'chu v'zaku alim asher b'chartem bam, heim ha'yoshia l'chem be'et tzaratchem. Go cry out to the gods whom you serve on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. ויאמרו בני ישראל אל השם חטאנו עשה אתה לנו ככל הטוב בעיניך חצילנו מהיום הזה. God, do whatever you want to us, just save us this once. If you tell God, do whatever you want, just save us this once, the response is, fine, I'll send you Yiftach. And that's exactly what happened. Yiftach, by the way, is not just the fact that Yiftach is a complicated personality who has this oath and the issue with his daughter. Yiftach is a civil war that by the time he finishes, after he finishes with Gilad and with Bnei Ammon, turns to Bnei Ephraim, and there's a civil war in the land of Israel that in which 42,000 Jews are killed. So understand that Yiftach isn't, the problem with Yiftach isn't just his own background and story. Yiftach is a leader who turns on his own people. So where does that leave us? If you turn to the bottom of page 2, there's a chart. This chart is essentially a summary of the chronology of Sefer Shoftim. There are many gaps in this chart for the obvious reason that we don't know all the details of the chronology of Sefer Shoftim. What we do know is that Yiftach is approximately 300 years after Yetziat Mitzrayim. 300 years after they entered into the land of Israel. How do we know that? Any guesses? Because Yiftach and the king of Bnei Ammon have a dialogue, which we're going to read momentarily, in which Yiftach says to the king of Bnei Ammon, where were you for the last 300 years? Gives us more or less a frame of reference, 300 years since Yetziat Mitzrayim. In each case of the iterations of Sefer Shoftim, you have a period of time in which they are oppressed by a foreign power. The numbers are in the middle column. You have the name of the oppressing nation. In this case, in the case of Yiftach, it's Ammon. And you have the years of the Shofet. In this case, Ifzan, line 10, Ifzan is 7 years, is leads for 7 years, Yiftach for 6. All right, so to summarize, if I haven't lost you yet, raise your hand. No. To summarize, trying to understand Elimelech and where he's coming from, and the chait of Elimelech, on the one hand we have his journey from the land of Israel, on the other hand we have the mysterious journey to Moab in the case of Rahab, which is inexplicable. So we started to look at the historical context of what's going on. When did this famine take place? Chazal point to Ifzan and Yiftach in coded language as the frames of reference in which to place the story of Megillat Rut. Just in terms of the years, if when Naomi returns to Beit Lechem, Ifzan is the Shofet, how many years earlier did they leave Beit Lechem?
10.
At least 10. Question: how you interpret the pasuk of, right? They married and remained 10 years, and then Machla Michlian died, and then she heard. So at least 10 years, 10 plus, between 10 and 15 years. Yiftach is a shofet, as it says in the text, for 6 years. Which means that from Ifzan, if I want to go back 10 years, where am I going back to? I'm going back to not the time of Yiftach, but 10 years before Ifzan puts us in the years of Shibud, before Yiftach. It puts us into those 18 years of oppression under the hands of Bnei Ammon. Now, that doesn't yet solve our problem, because Megillat Rut is not about Ammon. It's about Moab. So, hold that question for a moment. But we do know now, if Chazal's frame of reference leads us in the direction that I think it's leading us, that the story of Elimelech starts in the years of the oppression under the hands of Bnei Ammon. So, what I'd like to do in the time remaining is take a look at a very strange dialogue between Yiftach and Melech Bnei Ammon. And I'm going to read it. You can read it with me in a Tanakh, or you can read it on the back page, although the back page already divided it. I divided it up a little bit, so it cheats. But it's Shoftim Perek Yud Aleph. Melech ben Amon, as we said, for 18 years is oppressing Israel east of the Yarden. Then they cross over the Yarden and they come into the land of Israel itself. The people don't know what to do. They turn to Yiftach, who was an outcast who they recruited back from his exile to lead them. Subplot that's not our discussion for today. And Yiftach begins to engage in a diplomatic effort with the king of Ammon. Vayishlach Yiftach malachim melech bnei Ammon lemor. Ma li valach kivata elai lilachem ba'artzi. Opening the message, conversation to the king of Ammon is, what did I ever do to you? What did I ever do to you? What business do you have here? So Melech Ammon makes a claim. Vayomer Melech bnei Ammon el Melechei Yiftach, ki lakach Yisrael et artzi balotom mitzrayim, me'arnon ve'ad ha'yabok ve'ad ha'yarden, v'yata ashiv ha'eden v'shalom. Because when Israel left Egypt, they grabbed my land. They grabbed the land of Bnei Ammon, between the Arnon and the Yabok and the Yarden. And for that, we have a map.
Okay, just the second button.
So just to understand the geography, this is important to understand the dialogue. The Arnon is here. The Yabok is here. The land between the Arnon and the Yabok is the story in Parshat Chukat. It's referenced again in Parshat HaShavua this week in Parshat Dvarim. This is the land which originally was conquered by Sichon, Melech Amori, which Yiftach will then make reference to, and we conquered it from Sichon. We had come up from the south. We had sent messengers to Edom and asked them if we could go through the land. They said no. We turned south, we went all the way around the land of Moab, and we came up to Nachal Arnon, and we turned to Sichon, and we said, Sichon, can we come through your land? Sichon said no. So we said, too bad. That's the land. If you look carefully in this area, you'll see cities like Cheshbon, which will be referenced in this story as well. So Yiftach sends another message. Bnei Ammon says, wait a second, you took my land, Anon, to Yabok. To which Yiftach responds and says, Vayosef od Yiftach, Vayishlach malachim el melech bnei Ammon. Remember who he's talking to. Who is he talking to? King of Ammon. Now, it's true, Ammon and Moab are
cousins.
Granted. But bear in mind, he's talking to the king of Ammon. Vayomar lo, koma Yiftach, lo lakach Israel et eretz Moab ve'et eretz b'nei Ammon. Israel never took land that belonged to Ammon and Moab. Who cared? Who mentioned Moab? He's talking to the king of Ammon. Ki. Now he teaches him a history lesson. So in case anybody missed it in Parshat Chukat, and again in Parshat Dvarim, you get it here. Ki va'alotam mimitzrayim. Vayelach Yisrael b'midbar ad Yam Suf. Vayevo Kadesh. We left Egypt. We went to Kadesh. Vayishlach malachim ha'malach Edom lemor. Evana be'artzecha v'lo shema melech Edom. We sent messengers to the king of Edom. He wouldn't let us through. Ve'el melech v'gam el melech Moav shalach v'lo avav. Vayesh Yisrael b'kadesh. We sent messengers to Moav too. Wouldn't let us through. Vayelach b'midbar v'yasev et eretz Edom. We went all the way around the land of Edom. All the way around the land of Moav. We encamped by Arnon in the south, the Nachal in the south. We never touched the land of Moab. Arnon was the border between Moab and Sichon. Has Yiftach missed a point here? Because what's he talking about? Moab. Who's he talking to? Ammon. וישלח ישראל מלאכים אל סיחון מלאכי אמורים מלאכי שבון ויאמר לו ישראל נדנה בארצך את מקומי ולא האמין סיחון את ישראל עבור בגבולו ויאסוף סיחון את כל עמו ויחנו ביצה וילחם עם ישראל סיחון. Well, he has to go through their line too. They came out to meet us with swords and spears. They greeted us with war. So we fought. ויתן השם אלוקי ישראל את סיחון ואת כל עמו ביד ישראל ויקום ויבש ישראל את כל ארץ אמורי יושב הארץ ההיא. We conquer the land from סיחון, king of אמורי. וישו את כל גבול אמורי מארנון ועד היבוק מן המדבר ועד הירדן. That box between the Arnon and the Yabok that we took from סיחון. Argument number one. Arguments, law of, rule of, or defense of, what's Yiftach's argument? First of all, you have no business here. It's not your land. You lost it to Sichon, although the you lost it to Sichon is a reference to Moab. We'll come back to that. And we took it from Sichon. We took it from Sichon in self-defense. We just wanted to walk through. They came to attack us. Okay. Argument number one. Argument number two. God gave us this land. You're going to take it away from him? You start up with us. You start up with God. God help you. Hello? את אשר יורישך כמו שלוהך אותו תירש. ואת כל אשר אוריש לשם אלוקינו מפנינו אותו נירש. You have your gods. You have our gods. Your God, Kmosh, gave you your land. Our God gave us our land. Stop here for a moment. Hold your finger on the place. Opposite this chart on the back page, in source number two, several references to the deities of Ammon and Moab. Oylecha, pasuk in Bamidbar, parak of Aleph, which is in the story of the conquest of the land of Sichon. Oylecha Moab, avadta am Kemosh. Kemosh is the god of Moab. In case it's not clear, next source, Malachim Aleph. Az yivne shlomo bama lichmosh shikutz Moab ulamolech shikutz b'nei Amon. Every nation had their own deity. The deity of Moab's name was Kemosh. The deity of Ammon was Molech. Or Milkom. Second reference. So he's talking to the king of Ammon, and he says to him, your God, Kemosh, gave you your land, our God gave us our land, except that he's got the deities mixed up. He's talking to Ammon, not to Moab. We're not finished. Next. V'ata, hatov tov ata mi Balak ben Zippor melech Moab? Are you any better than Balak, king of Moab? He tried it once, look where it got him. I don't know, you're talking to the king of Ammon and you reference the king of Moab. Not a smart thing to do. Next. Bishevet Yisrael b'cheshbon uvivnoteha uva'aror or uvivnoteha uvachol le'arim asher al yedei Arnon shlosh me'ot shana umadua lo yitzaltem be'etahi. This is a statute of limitation on land claim. 300 years we've been sitting here. 300 years. You've ignored us for 300 years. Now you come and make a claim? I don't know how long the statute of limitation is, but 300 years has already passed. What's the name of the city he references? Cheshbon. Cheshbon is a Moabite stronghold. It's a Moabite city. And so it concludes, V'ani emanuchi lo chatati lach v'ata osei tida ali lachem bi ki... So maybe he ignored Yiftach because Yiftach thought he was talking to the king of Moab.
But the more likely scenario is that we have to understand the geopolitical context of the time of Sefer Shoftim. Moav and Ammon aren't just cousins. In almost every instance of Ammon and Moav in Sefer Shoftim, they're working together in concert. Ehud ben Gera, back in Perek Gimel. ויחזק השם את עגלון מלך מואב ויאסוף אליו את בני עמון. Fighting Moab, so Moab gathered together his allies, his cousins, his bnei brit, namely bnei Ammon. Ammon and Moab is a united kingdom. Later in history, they'll separate and function independently. But at this period of time, Ammon and Moab is essentially a united front. Claiming the land back from between the Arnon and the Avot was originally a land that belonged to Moab. And the southern part was Moab, and the northern part was Ammon, ki az gvul Ammon. We took it from Sichon, claim now from Bnei Ammon. Where does all this lead me? To a very simple conclusion. When Elimelech leaves the land of Israel, he goes to Moab. Not because there's a famine in the land, there's a drought, there's no rain, and therefore he wants to go to somewhere where there's rain, so you go to the other side of the desert. But because this famine is not caused by rain, or lack of rain. What's the description of the years of Shibud? Vayiratsu, vayirotsutsu, oppressed and distressed. Famine can be caused by lack of rain. Famine can be caused by war. For 18 years, Israel has been at war. And the winning side in those 18 years has been Ammon/Moab. And so there's bread, there's food in Ammon/Moab. So Elimelech takes his family and he makes a critical decision to go to the land of Moab. That act isn't about leaving the land of Israel. It's an act of treason. The chait of Elimelech is nothing short of treason. They're at war with Moab. And he goes to the land of the enemy. And into this gulf, Chazal insert the discussion of the background in the Medrash, the background of Rut and Orpah, and who were they, and from royalty, and from leadership. Elimelech went to the land of Moab. I'm assuming he was embraced by the king of Moab with open arms. And when Naomi comes back to Beit Lechem, and people stand there in the front of Beit Lechem and they say, Azot Naomi, this is Naomi. Their question isn't about this impoverished woman, what happened to her when she went to Chutz Laaretz. It's about the chutzpah that Naomi has to show her face again in the land of Israel and Beit Lechem. They went to the land of Moab. They abandoned us, treason. No surprise that nobody will offer Naomi a morsel of bread. She's an almana. Ruth is a gioret. You have yatom ba'amana in the same breath. Ger yatom ba'amana, and nobody will give them a morsel of bread or touch them with a 10-foot pole. Not known only because of the halachic question of Moaviva lo Moavia, which is another whole discussion on another shir. Ruth is called throughout the Megillah, throughout the story, Ruth ha Moavia. The emphasis isn't just because of the question about her giur. She's from the land of the enemy. And Naomi has the chutzpah to return with a Moabite? This is the central motif around which the Megillah revolves. Naomi's effort to return, Ki fakad Hashem et Amon latet lem lachem,
The war is over. There's bread in the land of Israel. Israel is recuperating, reviving itself. And now Naomi has the chutzpah to return. Of course she wants to return. She never wanted to leave in the first place. Elimelech left. Machlon and Chilion married Moabites. They're the ones who settled in the land of Moab for 10 years plus. And Naomi has the strength and the will and the internal strength, heroic strength, to return to her home. But even greater than Naomi's strength is the strength of Ruth, who knows full well from whence she comes. And her loyalty to Naomi will stand the test of time. They will return. And the story that unfolds the greatness of Naomi, the heroic greatness of Ruth, and above all, the willingness of Boaz to accept her with open arms. And that's the introduction to the next part of the shiur, which Bezrat Hashem will have to be next year.
Of Beit Lechem, she's chutzpahdik. In the eyes of the people of Beit Lechem, who are no role models to judge from,